Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, March 17th. As we begin year two of the COVID-19 pandemic, we are at a hopeful but complicated place. So, like in the United States, nearly two-thirds of people over 65 have gotten at least one vaccine dose, according to the New York Times COVID tracker. We're vaccinating people at three times the rate of Germany, Italy, and France, which are all in new lockdowns. Israel is vaccinating people at three times the rate of the U.S. Research there, reported in the Jerusalem Post, finds the Pfizer vaccine, the one they use in Israel, is effective against the U.K. variant, but that the variant is still 45% more contagious than the original Wuhan one, and continues to spread fast among the unvaccinated, and researchers are unsure how the vaccines will do against future mutations. They pointed that out in that Israeli research. Back here in the United States, for all the reporting on vaccine hesitancy among Black Americans, an NPR PBS Marist poll finds a larger percentage of white Americans say they do not plan to get vaccinated than Black Americans, 28% versus 25%. The single biggest group, broken down by politics and gender, is Republican men. 49% of Republican men said they do not plan to get vaccinated, and around the same number, 47% of the men who voted for Donald Trump said they will not. Now, Trump did just last night make his most direct and public appeal to his supporters to get the shot. This is obviously a reaction to these recent polls, but there's the data on who's the most vaccine hesitant from the NPR PBS Marist poll, and a CBS News poll found similar trends. More than 1,200 Americans died from COVID-19 yesterday, according to the New York Times COVID tracker. That's down by a third from 2 weeks ago, but would still be another 400,000 or so deaths over the next year at the current pace. And there are hot spots, including New York City, which has had fairly aggressive behavior rules, and Miami, which has not. The number of new cases per day and new deaths per day in New York City, about 63 deaths a day, is the same as it was 2 weeks ago, despite the aggressive vaccine rollout, expected to have reached 3 million shots administered by sometime today. That's just New York City, 3 million shots. So there is hope, but uncertainty here on the second St. Patrick's Day of the COVID-19 era. At least there was a small St. Patrick's Day parade up Fifth Avenue this morning, unlike last year when it was just canceled. So let's try to make sense of where we are at with my first guest today. And I had her name right here. She is Ravina Kular, epidemiologist and infectious disease expert. She's a PharmD or doctor of pharmacy and an MPH, Master of Public Health. Dr. Kular, thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian, for having me on. It's great to be on.
And we could start lots of places. Let's start in Western Europe. Why are they experiencing a new wave of serious lockdowns? We always say that the Europeans have been more serious about controlling the virus than Americans have.
Yeah, I mean, what you're seeing in Europe is that the vaccine rollout has been quite slow. It's very slow in comparison to the U.S., where here in the U.S. we are seeing a decline in cases. But in Europe, there's been a very slow rollout of the vaccines. And secondly, you have these variants which are circulating around. The B.1.1.7 variant, which, as you stated, is up to 70% more contagious and up to 65% more deadly. So with a variant that is more contagious, that just inherently will cause more cases.
Some public health experts say, U.S., watch out. We have always been right behind Europe in the timeline of new waves, and it's likely to happen again. The UK variant, the one you just cited, plus what they're calling the New York variant, are going to cause a big surge here, and the U.S. is opening up too quickly and still vaccinating too slowly to stop it. Do you have an opinion about that?
You know, I have said the same exact thing. I think Europe has been an example for what the U.S. could expect. And my fear is with businesses reopening and people loosening their guard, and there being currently 17, 18 states that have let go of their mask mandates, that we are going to see another wave. And yeah, there are other variants that are circulating here in the U.S. The New York has a B1.5.2.6 variant, which has the ability to outwit our immune system and prevent antibodies from neutralizing the virus. And they aren't effective as effective against the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So, yeah, I have a huge concern that we could see another wave.
Say that again about the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. Are you saying the New York variant isn't effective against the vaccines, or the vaccines aren't effective against the New York variant?
Yep. Yeah. So these vaccines actually they have a decreased effectiveness against this variant. What it's been shown through publications is that this B1.5.2.6 variant has the ability to actually outwit our immune system, and prevent antibodies from actually neutralizing the virus. So, and it's been shown that the vaccine just has a decreased effectiveness against this variant. It behaves very similarly to the South African variant, and also the Brazilian variant as well.
So given what you just said, are you confident in the recommendation from the Centers for Disease Control that vaccinated people can hang out without masks or social distancing with other vaccinated people? Or are they jumping the gun, since we don't have that much data yet on the variant's interaction with the vaccines that you were just describing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the CDC has a very difficult role in terms of trying to advocate and get more people to get vaccinated, as there are still a large group of the American people which are vaccine hesitant. But then they also have to come out with data, with recommendations which are backed up by science. So these recommendations that vaccinated people can get together, not wear masks, not be so concerned about physically distancing, I feel that's too soon. We don't have enough data on whether these vaccines prevent transmission and prevent the acquisition of asymptomatic COVID-19 infection. A reminder is that these clinical trials only looked at the prevention of symptomatic COVID-19 infection. They did not look at transmission, and they did not look at the acquisition of asymptomatic COVID-19 infection.
And at the same time, the CDC is saying fully vaccinated Americans can get together with other fully vaccinated Americans without masks or social distancing, but should still avoid large groups and clustered situations like air travel. Do you understand where that line is and why in the CDC's telling?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the air travel situation, I feel like, you know, anytime you're traveling, you're going to have touch points where you can run into, with community cases still high, there's still the probability for someone acquiring COVID-19 infection. And I still think that the congregation, even though you're fully vaccinated, you still have to be mindful. It's too early to say that you can remove those masks and get together, even if you're fully vaccinated.
And is that to protect even the fully vaccinated because of the variants, or is that to protect the unvaccinated from the asymptomatic cases that the vaccinated people might have?
Yeah, Brian, it's both. With variants that are there, we still don't know how effective these vaccines are. And you know, you could, even though you're in a group where you're all fully vaccinated, once everyone disperses from that gathering, you could still be harboring the virus, and then you could pass it on to someone else which has not been vaccinated. So there's still a concern of having these even small gatherings and removing those masks.
Question from a listener via Twitter: are we tracking how many vaccinated people are now getting COVID?
I know that the CDC is currently evaluating that. So yes, that is being tracked by the CDC, and they will be, I'm sure, reporting that information in the future.
And what about, as a follow-up question, vaccinated people getting serious COVID, winding up in the hospital or dying? The numbers were said to be zero in the Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson trials. What about now that they're being rolled out in the real world? I haven't heard of a death or even a hospitalization. I would imagine if there was one, it would really make the headlines and everybody would be chattering about it. Have there been any?
Not to my knowledge, but there may be. You know, that's the thing with vaccines. With any vaccine, and as we can see with these vaccines as well, is that these vaccines prevent symptomatic COVID-19 infection. Also, if someone does get the infection and they are vaccinated, they're going to have a less of a severe form of that virus. So that's very positive and promising to know that there have not been really any reported cases thus far where people that have been vaccinated have been severely sick and have been which have led to death. So I'm sure there are a few cases, but nothing that's made the headlines.
Listeners, we're going to take a short break. Then we're going to continue with Dr. Kular. And we're not going to take a short break. We're just going to continue right now with Dr. Kular. That was my error. So let's go to a phone caller, and it's Kai in Newark. You're on WNYC. Hi, Kai.
Hi, good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm a longtime listener, and thank you for everything that you do. My main question for the doctor is, I own three restaurants here in Newark. We have declined to open for indoor dining at all three. Our city is greatly affected. Of course, we have a huge population that is very hesitant to get the vaccine. So one of the things that I have a question about is the fact that you can still, one, contract the virus once you're vaccinated, as well as still spreading the virus once you're vaccinated, correct? And so when you say, hey, the vaccine is very effective, I'm just trying to be clear on what that actually means. Because for us, obviously, our entire community that is greatly affected, as well as, you know, my livelihood, you know, owning three restaurants here, it's just a serious cause of concern. And that's my question.
Yeah. So by effectiveness, I mean that the clinical trials, they looked at the prevention of symptomatic COVID-19 infection. And most of these individuals, which were included in the clinical trials, they were healthy individuals. So it was about, for the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, they were shown to be 95% effective at preventing symptomatic COVID-19 infection. We still don't know how these vaccines work in preventing transmission and in preventing the acquisition of asymptomatic COVID-19 infection and transmitting the virus in not only healthy individuals, but other individuals too with comorbidities, those individuals which are immunosuppressed and elderly, as we know for other vaccines, that those individuals which are immunosuppressed, that are elderly, that have comorbid conditions, they may not respond so well to vaccines, and they may need additional booster doses. So I know that the CDC is collecting further information on these other populations, and we need to see that data. So until we really get more data from these vaccines, that's what I mean by we don't know really how effective it is against transmission and prevention of really transmitting the virus and someone being a carrier and passing that virus on to other people.
There is, again, a positive indication along those lines from the studies in Israel, looking at a USA Today headline, for example, from a few days ago. Right here it says, Pfizer vaccine appears effective against asymptomatic COVID-19 cases, data from Israel suggests.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's very positive to know that there is a decrease. There is a potential for not having the transmission for asymptomatic, for preventing asymptomatic COVID-19 infection. And I think we need more data from other countries. That's just one country, one small subset. And theoretically, with other vaccines, that's what we have seen. But I think we need more data on that.
I see that you retweeted, and Kai, thank you for your call. I hope that was helpful, and please call us again. I see you retweeted that two new papers found large COVID clusters in fitness centers. Can you describe what you know about that? And I'm curious if that study, those two studies, distinguish between fitness studios and gyms, which currently have different rules in New York. Gyms are allowed to open, fitness studios are not.
Right. So in fitness studios, if you think about it, everyone is confined in a smaller indoor space. And there is a potential for those, even if there are mask mandates in those fitness studios, there is a high probability that that mask is going to fall off and slip off your nose. And being in a close confined area that has a high potential to cause an outbreak situation. So this is what the study showed, is that there was an outbreak that was found in these fitness studios, where unlike a gym, which may be a little bit more spread out, and the potential for there to be those face masks potentially even more mandated, there is a higher likelihood for people to potentially acquire the virus in those studio settings, which are a little bit with more people there, all in one space, and that's what the study showed.
Bob in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bob.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
My question is, I was unblinded, and I'm on the AstraZeneca double-blind study. I'm a veteran, 66, very healthy. I didn't get the flu shot until a few years ago because I never got sick. But I'm about to travel to Thailand to teach for a year, and I was going to do this last year, but COVID got in the way. I had malaria pills years ago that made me deathly sick, so I was expecting to be sick from this AstraZeneca, but I had no arm soreness, no nothing, and I actually went into the VA to get the Pfizer vaccination because I thought I got the placebo, but they told me I actually got the AstraZeneca. So I stayed with that. I got the second shot. Again, no side effects, but I'm wondering if this vaccination is as strong as the other drugs, and should I have any concerns? Because I'm about to leave for Thailand at the end of the month, and I'm at the Thai embassy as we speak to try to get everything put together for my travel. What should I? I mean, I'm not a worrier, but should I be concerned with this AstraZeneca issue?
Yeah. So the AstraZeneca vaccine has been shown to, on average, be about 60% effective. And if you think about it, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, when with both doses, have been shown to be about 95% effective. I mean, 60% effective is still good at preventing COVID-19 infection, but with an efficacy of about 95%, that's going to be a little bit higher. But the fact is that you got vaccinated, you got the vaccine, and still be mindful, obviously, about those infection prevention measures. But you got a vaccine, you are protected, you have a lower probability of acquiring the infection than those that have not been vaccinated. So I would feel, just be cautious, but you have been vaccinated.
Bob, thank you for your call. I hope that clears that up. The AstraZeneca is another very interesting story this week. We haven't been dwelling on it just because it's not so relevant in the United States for the most part right now. But they've stopped using it for the moment in parts of Europe where they were using it because of a few cases of reported blood clots following vaccination with the AstraZeneca vaccine. But I think the closer look that they're taking is revealing that there is not a relationship between the blood clots and the vaccinations. What can you see?
That's correct. So AstraZeneca stated that they are aware of 15 events of deep vein thrombosis, DVT, and 22 events of pulmonary embolism. But that's in 17 million people who have had at least one shot. And they have stated that this number is much lower than would be expected to naturally occur in a general population this size. This is also similar to what's been seen with other COVID-19 vaccines. And just yesterday or the day before, the head of the European Medicines Agency has stated that they are firmly convinced that the benefits of this vaccine outweigh those risks, especially in Europe, where the vaccine rollout has been so slow. Halting a vaccine such as this AstraZeneca vaccine would definitely impact the community.
Last thing, the New York Times has an article about Serbia today, with a better vaccination rate than most of Western Europe, three times that of Western Europe. But they're using the Russian and the Chinese vaccines as well as the various Western ones. And from what I understand, there's more uncertainty about whether the Russian and Chinese ones have actually been tested enough to know if they actually work. Do you have any opinion about that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, those vaccines, they have got to go. They have got to undergo more of a rigorous clinical trials, and we don't know yet about the effectiveness of those vaccines. Even though, you know, Serbia has been having a high percentage of the population that's been vaccinated, I still don't think that we know how effective those vaccines are. And it would be very encouraging to see if the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were available there. But currently with the Sputnik vaccine, and we don't know how effective those really are yet.
Ravina Kular, global infectious diseases expert, PharmD or Doctor of Pharmacy, and MPH, Master of Public Health. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.